From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Glad you're here. Thanks so much for being with us all week long. We're going to close out strong with Harold Ford from Washington, giving us the Democratic perspective on the president's State of the Union last night, the structure, the effectiveness, and what he's going to say to follow up now, as this campaign will be about 9 months long, and he's going to be in Philadelphia today. Usually you build on the State of the Union address, but this president does not do a lot of speaking, does almost no interviews, and zero press conferences. How that will change, I'm not sure. But it was fiery, it was loud, he was yelling, and I thought it was essentially a campaign address. If I closed my eyes and I said, where's the speech being given, I would say the Democratic National Convention. And even as Mitt Romney said, who is hardly a right-wing firebrand, he said the days of these speeches being about unifying the country or the state of the nation seem to be over. So before we get to Admiral Stavridis, let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Users of TikTok are getting a pop-up on the app lying about our bill, saying stop the ban on TikTok. But, of course, if you actually read the bill, it's not a ban.
That is outgoing Congressman Mike Gallagher on the China Committee. Let's go. Congress, despite protests and lobbyists, is in the process of banning TikTok. If the Chinese company does not sell at all, bad news for the Biden campaign, they'd have to close their account.
Number two.
I think he had a strong night, and I think he had a strong night in part because of the economic agenda that he outlined. I still think that if you ask people who watch the speech, the triumphalism about where the economy is today is probably not matching their...
And they did add 275,000 jobs, but the unemployment rate went up. That, of course, David Axelrod, the State of the Union, reaction and analysis from the expulsion. There was a few. The 20-minute delay, which was because of protesters, Senator Katie Britt's rebuttals, and Donald Trump's real-time truth socials. It's all coming your way.
Number one.
In January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation. And he said, I address you at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. Now it's we who face an unprecedented moment.
Really?
In the history of the Union.
Okay. Russia and who? Us? President Biden made it through. But the anger, the partisanship, the spin, almost too much to take. His obsession with Donald Trump, clearly an issue, and the mishandling of the border and crime he tries to reverse. We'll bring in the highlights. Let's bring in first Admiral James Stavridis. He's got a great book coming out. I got the galley, 2054, a novel, and I'm sure it's going to be a big hit. Admiral, welcome back.
Good to be with you, Brian.
Admiral, this is what started the speech, cut eight.
If anybody in this room thinks Putin will stop at Ukraine, I assure you he will not. But Ukraine can stop Putin. Ukraine can stop Putin if we stand with Ukraine and provide the weapons that needs to defend itself.
Your thoughts about that?
I thought it was a strong opener and very, very true. And let's face it, the echoes of the 1930s are getting louder. When you think back to that period of time, you see Nazi Germany on the march, not at all unlike Vladimir Putin, or in Japan, the Imperial Japanese Armed Forces are pushing through China and Manchuria. What did the United States do? We came home. We isolated ourselves. How'd that work out? Well, 10 months after Roosevelt gave that speech was Pearl Harbor. So we can try and decide that these overseas threats really shouldn't worry us that much, but they really should. And here's the good news to conclude. Talk about return on investment for $50-60 billion, which the Europeans have already put into the kitty. So we're just matching the Europeans at this point. For that amount of money, which is 5% maybe of our defense budget, we don't put a single boot on the ground. And ultimately, the Ukrainians will stop Putin for us.
But the thing is, Admiral, you missed the best part. We're buying it from ourselves and then replenishing our stocks. Why the president didn't bring that up? I don't understand.
Yeah.
And General Jack Keane said this was also a missed opportunity in this way, because he feels the way you do and the way I do about Ukraine aid. Nobody wants to talk about it. Cut nine.
I certainly appreciate the fact that Ukraine was in the speech, but I mean, he missed the opportunity to really educate the American people in terms of why this really matters to us. He started with the right point. Putin wants to go beyond Ukraine. And if Ukraine topples, we got to move more troops, more ships, more airplanes into the European theater to attempt to deter him from moving into NATO. That detracts from everything we're trying to do with China. And that's the issue for the security of the American people.
Do you agree? I mean, wouldn't that have been an opportunity to say, guys, I know you're worried about money. We all are. But do you understand what this investment will do? Because without it, we're going to have to bolster all the forces up in Eastern Europe.
100% correct. And General Jack is very right to pull in the impact this will have in Asia. And she is watching this speech and how the Congress reacts, whether they provide that aid ultimately to Ukraine. And I think they will, Brian, but it's going to be a near run thing. If they don't do that, that's going to embolden President Xi to push not only at Taiwan, but against the Philippines, Vietnam, and the South China Sea. You really, the echoes of the late 30s are profound here, and we can either spend a lot less money in the short term,
right,
or ultimately we're going to have to build a much bigger armed force to deal with problems both in Europe and Asia. And final thought, Brian, and some may say, well, why? I don't care about Asia, and I don't care about Europe. The problem is this huge global economy is completely intertwined. And if we break it and allow China to run rampant in Asia and Putin to run rampant in Europe, our markets, our margins, all of that will get squeezed. It's the 1930s again. We can still avoid it.
All right. I agree with you. It's just got to be explained regularly and consistently.
Yes.
And conversationally and in speeches without – the minute you start saying good guys, bad guys, you're not going to get what you want, but we'll see what happens. We know the president's going to be in Philadelphia. Let's see if he brings it up in a more bipartisan way. So let's go over to Gaza. How do you feel about the president moving to build a humanitarian, I guess, pier in Gaza without putting boots on the ground? Just bring the humanitarian aid and give it away.
I think it makes sense, Brian, and look, two things can be true at once. On the one hand, you and I would agree Israel needs to continue significant military operations and do everything they can to find, fix, and kill Hamas. That's true. On the other hand, 2.2 million civilians are starving to death right in front of our eyes. So if the United States and a lot of the on-the-ground portion of this entirely will be done by partner nations and the Israelis themselves.
Not the UN.
So if we can, not the UN, and that's another conversation. But the idea of building a pier, let me just give you the numbers. Gaza needs like 200 trucks a day, and a truck each in a container on a container ship, there's 20 trucks. You pull in a big ship, you've got 10,000 containers on that big ship times 20. That's like 200,000 trucks loads coming in on each ship. That's hundreds of days of relief. It's a lot better than just airdropping some MREs.
So a couple of things that are coming out now. Evidently caught on tape is the President of the United States talking to his Secretary of State and saying, I'm going to unload on Bibi Netanyahu. I'm going to have a come to Jesus meeting with him. And he better be ready for it. That was caught on tape last night. Okay. Egyptian officials say that Sinwar, who is the bin Laden of Hamas, believes Hamas currently has the upper hand in negotiations on hostages, citing internal political divisions with Israel, including cracks with Netanyahu and Benny Gantz, the wartime government, mounting U.S. pressure on Israel to do more to alleviate the suffering of Gazans. So that is all this stuff is true. But now the enemy also hears this, and that is emboldened the enemy. That's problematic.
It is incredibly problematic. And above all, what we need to do is keep an alignment between ourselves and Israel here, because believe me, the rest of the world is not going to fall in line behind the idea of continuing to go after Hamas, point one. Point two is the Israelis have to continue military operations, and we've discussed this before. The military center of gravity here are those tunnels, 400 miles of tunnels. Israel's going to have to decommission those, flood them, explode them, seal them off. And number three, yes, they need to try to get the remaining 100 or so hostages back. And if you're Sinwar, you are reveling in the divisions between the U.S. and Israel. We ought to do any criticism or disagreement ought to be done in private, not in public.
You know, and I don't want to put words in your mouth, but General Jackin just said, and most military officials believe, you cannot let you cannot not go into Rafah. If Hamas has four battalions left and they've only finished off 18 reportedly, that's a win for them in their world. So how could you not go into Rafah? And while this delay is happening, why not just do it? Because the longer you wait, the harder it's going to be to do it.
I think militarily, the Israelis have to go after the remaining pockets, and they are getting to be pockets, but four battalions is a significant number of troops. Israel's going to have to do that, and I think there will be a military operation into Rafah at the end of the day. All the more reason it's important to the north to establish food passages, because that's what will draw the hundreds of thousands of Palestinians out of Rafah, which is all the way in the south. Set up the food, set up the medical. I'd bring in a hospital ship as well, by the way, a U.S. hospital ship. Set that up to the north, pull the civilians out of there. That'll be the last days of Hamas down in Rafah.
But it's got to happen quick, don't you think, Admiral?
Yeah, and I think everything I just described could happen in 2 to 3 months. That's not a ridiculous amount of time. And then you've got to consider what comes after. But I think you can do both things. You can attempt and actually improve conditions for the humanitarian side, and you can continue to go after Hamas, and you got to do both.
What if the president says, "Don't, you're not going into Rafah, or I'm going to condition your military. We're going to stop delivering weapons." If he tells him not to go into Rafah, what do you do?
I think the Israelis will go into Rafah anyway.
Yeah.
And they certainly can handle 2, 3, 4 battalions of Hamas, and there'll be a period of real tension between the U.S. and Israel. But, you know, there are divisions in the Israeli cabinet, but they are united on destroying Hamas.
Are.
That's not going to change.
Okay, congratulations. When's the book coming out?
It comes out on Tuesday, Brian, 2054, and it's about artificial intelligence. It's set in the year 2054. And I think I'm going to be in studio with you next week. Maybe we could talk about it then.
Maybe we will. What a perfect segue to break. How did you know I was up against a break, Admiral? you could do this yourself. Admiral James Tarvidis, the 16th Supreme Allied Commander of NATO. His upcoming book is called 2054, a novel. Download it now. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Talk soon. Bye.
All right. Listen, your turn next. I know you watched the 66-minute speech. I know you heard the interruptions. I know you don't want to talk about what happened with the Gold Star dad, with Sid Rosenberg getting tossed out. What exactly did he do? We're going to talk about all that, play some more clips, and talk about what it all means as we get set for the longest presidential campaign ever.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress and the Senate to demand they block the bill. He feels political win. He viewed it as be a political win for me and a political loser for him. It's not about him. It's not about me. I'd be a winner. Not really. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal. That's right. But how many of the thousands of people being killed by illegals?
Okay, worst ad-lib ever. And it turns out that Marjorie Taylor Greene was bailing him out because he was just in one of those rabbit holes of trying to ad-lib off the prompter and making absolutely no sense. And you heard what you said, illegal aliens. That's what the name we used to call them. Now we know some people are calling them newcomers, but the other term is illegal immigrants. And now other people call them migrants. Some people call them undocumented. But whatever you do, don't call them illegal. That's what I call them. That's what you call them. But that's not what Democrats call them. So the President of the United States responding to Marjorie Taylor Greene. I am not for the yelling out. You know, I'm not for it. I just don't think it's necessary. I get angry. You want to yell at your television? Then stay home. Yell at your television. Stay home. I just think it's a bad way to go down. Now everyone's just going to think it's England and... that's not our tradition, I didn't think. So Nancy Pelosi was asked about that moment because it's horrible that he doesn't bring her up. She was killed by an illegal alien who was arrested in New York, never should have been allowed to get in. Turns out him and his brother, members of the worst gang in Venezuela, looking to create havoc in this country, but we're going to be 6 years away from a hearing. So Nancy Pelosi was asked about that moment. Cut six.
Now, you should have said undocumented, but that's not a big thing, okay? What's the big thing about
that? No, I actually wasn't even going to ask about that. I was just going to ask more about the moment. But you do think that he should have said undocumented? That wasn't going to be my question.
Well, we usually say undocumented. Uh-huh. He said illegal. I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay.
I don't think it's a big deal.
But more broadly.
Because I think his focus was on the sympathy for the family.
Yeah.
It's a terrible tragedy.
Okay. When people talk about losing it, she cannot get through a contentious interview. Even when she goes on Democratic, you know, when George Stephanopoulos asks her a tough question once in a while, she just falls apart. But Nancy Pelosi feels so she's got to be a surrogate for a younger man, Joe Biden. And she was on last night, and she was determined to bring up, oh, he shouldn't have mentioned illegal. That's what she's concerned about? Lakin Riley was killed by an illegal immigrant, and she's worried about the terminology. You heard Dana Bash? I actually didn't even bring that up. And then Jake Tapper, Dana brought it up. You know, no, that's not what I was saying. So they don't want to make any news. But the president was not going to bring it up, didn't put in the copy. And I am all for having a lawmaker ask the president about this. On the State of the Union, I just think he should be best behaved. I don't think you should yell out in church, even if the priest gets you angry. I don't think if you're at an auditorium, if you're having any type of event, if you had a Broadway play, if you don't like the way the play's going, I wouldn't yell out. If you want to walk out, walk out. And that says something. I don't think you should yell at a comedian just because you paid money to get in. You know, when you get in there, you wear a tie, you wear a suit, you act your way, and then you come out and you go to the cameras and you say, what do you think of the president's remarks? And I was not for him last night, and I thought, this is the Wall Street Journal. The State of the Union speeches are forgettable. But President Biden's address on Thursday was memorable for all the wrong reasons. His address was long, divisive pep rally for Democrats, goading Republicans through a speech and targeting multiple various villains. Here are the villains. Rich people, a villain. Don't pay enough taxes, they're villains. If you like guns, you're a villain. If you don't give money for Ukraine, you're a villain. And if you're not a Democrat, you're a villain. Because he says it's enemy at home and enemy abroad.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
He's the most unpopular president who has ever run for re-election. A lot of what he's done is unprecedented. But tonight, instead of taking responsibility for that, he tried to lay blame. I mean, for one thing, the border, right? That's the number one issue in America. That's what every American, no matter where they live, wants to hear about. How is this catastrophe going to be resolved? I think it was 41 minutes into his speech before the commander-in-chief even made any reference to the border. And then he made no mention whatsoever about anything that he would do, his actions. I mean, he has executive authority. We all know he could solve that problem right now. He's been able to do that for 3 years, but he won't. And that was a great concern to all of us.
Yeah, and that was us, the speaker, and you could see his face, Speaker Johnson, when it became clear that it wasn't going to be an intriguing, unifying speech as a president who's running for re-election. It was going to be a re-election speech. And we haven't heard a lot of it because he doesn't give many speeches or many interviews. A guy offering analysis all night long and then in the post-game show, too, is my next guest, the co-host of The Five, former Tennessee Congressman Harold Ford. Congressman, welcome back.
Brian, how are you, brother? Thanks for having me, and good morning to you.
Good. How do you feel about what Speaker Johnson just said? You know, how long he waited to bring up the border and how partisan of a speech it seemed.
Well, I think a little differently than the speaker does about it. I thought going into the speech, there were a couple things that we all kind of knew, and I think they're important to lay out. First, this is one of the two most important speeches, maybe the two most, I think actually the two most important speeches the president will give over the next 8 months or 7 months and 25, 27, 28 days, whatever it might be before the election, because of the size of the audience that he got last night. The only time he'll even come close to that audience size again will be when he accepts the Democratic nomination in July in Chicago. So he was going to be political as a result. That's one element. Two, he was going to be political because this is the first time a president of any party in the TV era has given a speech, a State of the Union speech, when he already knows for certain whom his candidate in the general election will be, because former President Trump has virtually locked up the delegates. He will in the next 2 weeks because he has no opponents now in the race. They've all suspended their campaigns. And at the same time, Mr. Trump was his opponent. No time have we ever had this, was reacting in real time for a good part of the evening to what President Biden was saying. Now, when I say I disagree, I have a slightly different opinion than Speaker Johnson. Speaker Johnson was right. It was a political speech. But there are reasons as to why it was a political speech. Now, where I differ with him, when he says that the issue of the immigration was or border was not brought up for 41 minutes, that means that the president doesn't think it's important. He's right. It wasn't brought up until 41 minutes, but I differ with him. The president started out with Ukraine, started out with saying we have to stand up to Putin, which I think is a critical issue also. I don't necessarily think it's less or more important than border security, but I do believe if we don't stop Putin and we end up having – we see Article 5 of the NATO alliance invoked and we end up having to send troops to ensure the configuration, the lines that are drawn right now in Europe, I think that would be a serious, serious issue. So politics – is politics, most obvious statement of our call. And both sides play a little bit of it. And I think part of the reason that some Republicans were a little upset, a little feisty this morning is that Joe Biden was feisty last night. And he had to be in command. He had to have some energy. I mean, there were Democrats yesterday before the speech saying, gosh, I don't know if he's going to be able to withstand an hour or 50 minutes or an hour and 15 minutes of standing up there and not peeling over or not going over his words, not knowing what he was supposed to be saying. And I think he surprised a lot of Democrats, and I think he even surprised a lot of Republicans with the energy that he showed last night in the speech.
Right. I just thought, I mean, would you have signed off on that copy?
For him? Brian,
no, for you. If you were the president and you wanted to win four more years, is that what you wanted to do, especially when you ran as a unifier?
So I would have I'm a different guy. If I were in his spot at 81 years old last night, that was probably the best he could do. I'm not quarreling with you about what he ran on and how his inauguration speech almost 4 years ago, 3.5 years ago. Now we talked about working with both sides. Look, I think both sides' hands are dirty here. His hands are not the only ones dirty here in terms of wanting to reach across the aisle and work together. But he gave a speech last night, and he had two goals that they needed to reach. One, he needed to show he was alive in command, and two, he needed to figure out a way to unite his party. And both parties, both Mr. Trump and Mr. Biden need to do that. And I also thought, Brian, I thought the beginning of that speech was the most unconventional and unorthodox beginning of a State of the Union. I'm 53, and I was in Congress.
Well, I can even start yet. Unorthodox because he forgot to shake the speaker's hand and give him a chance to get introduced.
Well, I think that was intentional, but I think the beginning
really?
Of his speech, I think at the beginning of it, because I think he wanted to get right into it. I think the beginning of his speech when he didn't, because normally the president's within the first 30 seconds say the state of our union is strong, the state of our union is vibrant. He went right into the foreign policy, and I have a theory about it. I think that he did that. You can like it or not like it, but I think he did it because I think that the Biden team has looked at some of the polling data, and looked at how do you get we in our network when I was on with Brett and Martha and Britt Hume the other night during the South Carolina primary, our own Fox analysis showed that 60% of Ms. Haley, Governor Haley's voters in South Carolina, and she got about a little under 40% of the vote, said that they cannot vote for they had reservations at this moment voting for President Trump. And I think the Biden team looked at that and probably extrapolated out nationally and said, look, what are the issues animating and informing that decision, or at least at this moment? I'm not saying the Republicans don't come home, but at this moment, why are they so opposed to President Trump? And I think some of the data shows that on foreign policy, that there are a lot of Republicans, Bush Republicans, as they're conveniently, maybe not accurately, but conveniently called, who believe that that our foreign policy, we've got to push back on Putin. This is not a time to not be supporting Ukraine. So I thought it was intentional how he started the speech, figuring out ways how do I go after that
I want
group,
you to,
some of that group.
Right. Okay. I mean, that's a theory. Look, I'm pro arming Ukraine, but I think he missed the opportunity to say why. And here's what Jack Keane said. He couldn't believe he started with Ukraine. Number one, I think that's pretty big news that you think he intentionally blew off the speaker. That, I mean, do you have a source that told you that, or is that just your experience?
No one has told me. I think part of it was forgetfulness, and part of it was he was ready to get going. And
yeah, but you don't do that. Walk out before your introduction.
But, Brian, Marjorie Taylor Greene shouldn't have stood up and said what she said either. And the things, I mean, look, these guys have gone, there's a whole other level of decorum that is so foreign to me. I feel like I'm 83 as opposed to 53 the way I look at these things. I mean, I clapped for the president. I've clapped for President Bush. I didn't see one moment last night where Republicans stood up and clapped for him.
That's just it. You know what they try to do? Usually they craft speeches where they have moments where they both can clap. But he didn't point that. But they didn't. But he almost had nothing in there to unify. It was even intriguing to unify. I mean, listen to him. By the way, on the Ukraine thing, this is what he missed. He just keeps saying the same thing. Got to get him weapons. But instead, he doesn't like try to say why. And this is what I get from people that even today in studio talking to people go, Brian, why are you so for supporting Ukraine? And I go, and here's the reason. But listen to what General Jack Keane said. Cut nine.
I certainly appreciate the fact that Ukraine was in the speech, but I mean, he missed the opportunity to really educate the American people in terms of why this really matters to us. He started with the right point. Putin wants to go beyond Ukraine. And if Ukraine topples, we got to move more troops, more ships, more airplanes into the European theater to attempt to deter him from moving into NATO. That detracts from everything we're trying to do with China. And that's the issue for the security of the American people. And I think he just sort of struck the real strategic issue here, Brian, is that the United States is in a much more dangerous place. We're being threatened by our adversaries in three regions of vital national interest. We have war in two, Europe and the Middle East, and President Xi is threatening us in an Indo-Pacific region. And that should have made the case for that and how we have to unite to come together to deal with these major threats that we're facing.
So that, and the fact is that 80% of the weapons that we bought, we're buying it from ourselves, and that our European allies are beginning to buy from us. The main focus could be just expanding our military industrial base. He never brings that up. So Jim, you would help people like me and other people on the fence make that argument. But how many more people does he have to brief him, or speechwriters does he need to tell people why we need to be there?
I never like disagreeing with you, and I certainly like disagreeing with Jack Keane on matters. And I don't disagree with you on the national security matters. I disagree with you on how you thought, you and General Keane, about how you think you presented it. He started that speech talking about 1941. He included in his defense of why we should be funding Ukraine. He said that if we didn't stop Putin, he said, if you believe that Putin's going to stop in Ukraine, you don't know Putin. Now, no one can say it as eloquently. I think you said very eloquently, but I don't believe anyone says it with the credibility and eloquence that Jack Keane does. But my only point, Brian, when he said all these things about Ukraine, even if he didn't say it the way Jack Keane says, and I might add, Jack Keane says it three times a week on our network, and then you echo it a lot of the times, and you still get pushback from Republicans in the House and the Senate. They didn't clap on that. They didn't clap when we said in world hunger. All I'm saying, look, people have every right to behave how they want to behave. But when I was in Congress and the president said, we want to ensure that every American is fed every night, I got up and clapped because I actually believe that. And a lot of my colleagues did too. But I don't want to get in the weeds on it. I just think he did what he had to do last night. And I don't think the point should be lost on anybody that he is the first president to give a State of the Union, because State of the Unions are generally given in the first quarter, sometime the first month of the year, if not no later in the second or third month, where he already knows who his opponent will be. And his opponent is going – his opponent gave a pre-buttal. Mr. Trump did. Now, that has never happened that the nominee, because
he's not president. But Harold, I'll give you this. Here we go. He knows who his opponent's going to be. He's the president. And he's the president of the United States. He mentioned him 13 times, but not by name. And he said, FDR, we have a war. He goes, we had a war on two fronts. I'm thinking to myself, okay, two fronts, Japan and Russia. Now, I get Japan and Germany. Now, I get Russia's going to be one front. He actually says the second front's at home. When you start like that, how can you possibly expect to make progress with moderates converting a Nikki Haley voter? You're just saying to yourself, hey, guys, I'm breathing. I'm yelling. I'm passionate. And I'll probably last an hour. That's in my view.
Look, and I respect your view. I just don't agree with it. I think if you look at the polling around many of the people that support it, or at least the plurality of the people that supported Nikki Haley, many of those who are the supposedly never Trumpers. And this is not me preaching a book. These are just the numbers. These are Fox polling numbers. And we talked about this at length 2 weeks ago, when after the South Carolina primary. And a lot of what those people were saying were foreign policy. A lot of what they were saying, they didn't like some of those people didn't like what happened or things that are happening here in our country, including what happened on January 6th. Now, I'm not looking to invoke this to inspire or instigate a terrible debate between you and I or even your listeners. My only point is this is what the data shows. When President Trump says to the American people, as he's eloquently and rightly saying, that I'm appealing more to black voters and Hispanic voters, provinces of voters that generally vote Democrat, you know what I say? Let me see the data. And you know what I say after I see the data? He's right. He is appealing to a lot of those voters. So what's wrong with Joe Biden in his speech saying, you know, I'm going to go and try to appeal to the Haley voters?
I just thought you
now,
could
you
be president.
Well,
Harold,
but
Harold, but I thought as president of the United States, if someone gave me that speech, I'd go, guys, I can't act like I have an enemy at home. I could say I'm competing another party, but I can't compare my adversaries at home to fascist Japan. I mean, FDR was facing the same challenge. Okay, what challenge is that? Oh, the challenge of Germany and Japan in 1938 is the MAGA group and Russia? I thought, I'm like that. I go, guys, rewrite. Understand the sentiment, but let's be a little bit responsible. Well, let's leave that to the firebrands on both sides.
Look, you and I would have given a different speech, but you and I probably would not have told people to go to the Capitol on January 6th. Or if we did tell them and they mistook us, we would have probably said while they were there, guys, that's not what I meant.
But if you're going to keep on bringing up if he's going to keep on bringing up January 6th, it's like if the Republicans every day talked about the disaster in Afghanistan, I go, guys, no one's more upset about it than me. Enough. We'll bring it up when foreign policy pops up. We'll bring it up when he talks about what you would do different. Bring up the $80 billion he left on the ground. Bring up the Taliban's back in charge and women are back being repressed. But not every day. Because by the end of the week, by the end of the month, by the end of the year, I am no longer listening. When you bring up January 6th in the first 5 minutes, you lost me.
So, Brent, I don't disagree with you. My only point is this. There are a lot of Americans where that's not lost. And that's not what you and I would have done. But unfortunately, that's where we are.
Yeah.
Our country is there. And I thought you asked me about his speech and if he accomplished what he needed to accomplish last night. He has. The other reality is, Brian, as you and I know, more than 2/3 of the country wishes that this was not a rematch occurring between Donald Trump and Joe Biden. But guess what? That's what we have. So we now have, at least today. And what we have is two guys running against each other who are going to do what you do in campaigns, contrast your visions, your accomplishments, and your agenda for the country over the next 4 years. And guess what? Over the next 8 months or 7 months and 28 days, whatever it might be, we're going to have the most spirited, the most divisive. And the thing that worries me the most is that each of these guys, their supporters, each of them bring out the worst in the other supporters. So Trump brings out the worst in Biden supporters, and Biden brings out the worst in Trump supporters. And for the country, that's just not good, because I don't know how whomever wins the race, it's difficult then to go work with the other party if you've told the country
and
that the other party
and
are
whoever loses,
evil people.
Whoever loses, there's a sense that the world is – the country's over. They both made it clear. If my guy wins, the world is saved. If my guy loses, the world is over. Our country's over. So it's going to be.
And as a result, their supporters believe that. So that's why a lot of times people don't like it when Democrats work with Republicans and Republicans work with Democrats because the supporters say, wait a second, I thought you told me they were evil. You told me they were less than humane. So anyway, that's – but the speech did what he needed to do politically last night. I hope we don't descend to the point where you and I are lamenting right now.
No problem. Congressman, I look forward to seeing you in the five. Thanks so much for joining us. I appreciate it. We're up against a break. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
If Biden wins, can he even survive till 2029? The real question is, can we? Make America Great Again, Inc. is responsible for the content of this advertising.
That is a pretty good ad. Sal in North Carolina. Sal, what's on your mind?
Yeah, so I think the Republicans missed an opportunity last night. So Biden supposedly, during the investigation of his, into the classified documents, he didn't have the memory to withstand, the prosecution. So, they didn't go after him, right? So last night, either he shows up as that bumbling person that should not be investigated because he doesn't have a good memory, or he shows up where he did, he is acting in accordance that he does have good memory, good faculties, all that.
I see where Sal. And guess what? Robert Hur is going to be front and center in a couple of weeks, and he's going to have to just bring some color to his report. At which time, that's a great point. So if he goes and says, you misinterpreted my report, good. So charge him, right? And if he is that competent, that great behind the scenes, then I think he put on an act for Robert Hur. But I think we're going to get the tapes and see how detached he actually was. But he did what he had to do last night. The good news for Trump is he's got his opponent. I think he's much better off going against Biden than against all these others, even though they have flaws. So now you know who you're going to go against. It's going to be very hard to challenge and say that he's incompetent now. So game on.
Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Wow. Coming to you from Midtown Manhattan. What a week we've had. What a show we're in the middle of. We got Congressman Kevin Hern of Oklahoma joining us now. He's chairman of the Republican Study Group. What does last night mean with the State of the Union address and so much else going on? And Kennedy at the bottom of the hour, she can handle it all. She is a Swiss Army knife. We'll discuss that, too. Keep in mind, if you ever have to leave your local affiliate, you can always get us on the app. You just go on the Fox News app, and on the bottom it says watch. You just swipe over, and you could see the show because we have a video stream. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
Users of TikTok are getting a pop-up on the app lying about our bill, saying stop the ban on TikTok. But, of course, if you actually read the bill, it's not a ban.
It's not a ban. It's a sell. Sell off, ByteDance. Let's go, Congress. Despite protests and lobbyists, we're in the process of banning TikTok if the Chinese company ByteDance does not sell. Simple as that. That's bad news for President Biden because his campaign just opened up an account and wants to get to young people. Can we possibly put our country first ever?
Number two.
I think he had a strong night, and I think he had a strong night in part because of the economic agenda that he outlined. I still think that if you ask people who watch the speech, the triumphalism about where the economy is today is probably not matching their...
Misplaced. And that is why President Biden does not like David Axelrod. The State of the Union reaction and analysis from the expulsion, the 20-minute delay because of the protesters, Senator Katie Britt's rebuttal, and Donald Trump's real-time truth socials. It's all coming your way.
Number one.
In January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation. And he said, I address you at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. Now, it's we who face an unprecedented moment in the history of the Union.
He actually puts Republicans in the same basket as Nazi Germany and fascist Japan. President Biden made it through, yes, but the anger, the partisanship, the spin, almost too much to take. His obsession with Donald Trump is abundantly clear. And also the clear mishandling of the border and crime in America. Well, he's looking to flip it. We'll bring you the highlights. Congressman Kevin Hearn joins us now. Congressman, you sat in the chamber. What are your thoughts?
Well, what I saw, thanks for having me, Brian. What I saw was somebody that's been in politics for 50 years as a Democrat, the old same Democrat narrative, raise taxes, spend more, and life will be better. More big government, more regulation. I think that's what every American heard. And if that's where you're coming from, then you loved his speech. But we've got $34 trillion in debt. We need to curtail spending and get America back on a fiscal track that makes sense.
So for one thing, it must drive you nuts when he says, I've been cutting the deficit. That is a flat-out lie. What happened is the pandemic money sunset. We're not in a pandemic. So he says, I cut the deficit by $1 trillion. When he has really outspent everybody with the infrastructure plan, with the rescue plan, with the Inflation Reduction Act, he also vilified rich people. I don't hate rich people. I don't hate successful corporations. Now, I don't know. With the current tax system now, a lot of the money they save helps them buy other buildings and start other companies. But is it possible to have a rational conversation without trying to have a class warfare?
Well, certainly not with this president. You know, this is typical of somebody. I spent 35 years in business before I came to Congress 6 years ago. And what you're seeing with President Biden is, you know, he's never done anything his entire life. In fact, he alluded to it last night. His entire life, he's been in politics. And he doesn't have a connection with the real world. He's isolated in the White House. He gets told by, you know, staffers what he's supposed to say. And it just doesn't connect with the American people. He had a campaign speech last night, not a State of the Union. If he'd done a State of the Union, they'd boot him off the stage. It's been terrible.
Here is a little montage of how he's obsessed with Donald Trump. Cut to.
My predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want.
Just pause that right there. Do whatever the hell you want. Now, that bothers me because some people aren't as into it as we are. What he's trying to say is, I want NATO to pay their 2%, which this president should be saying, too. And he said, if they don't, I'll tell Vladimir Putin, do whatever the hell you want. That's Trump being Trump. That's not abandoning NATO. It's not urging Russia to act. It's urging allies to act. Let's listen. Keep going.
My predecessor, a former Republican president, tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want. My predecessor and some of you here seek to bury the truth about January 6th. Many of you in this chamber and my predecessor are promising to pass a national ban on reproductive freedom. A president, my predecessor, failed the most basic presidential duty. My predecessor, and many in this chamber, my Republican friends owe it to the American people, get this bill done. My predecessor, but unlike
okay.
My
so, I mean, he mischaracterized. There's plenty of things to go against Trump. Why don't you just be accurate? When he talked about January 6th, that's like, as I mentioned earlier, that's like Republicans every day bringing up Afghanistan. They were both epic bad days for the country. But if you bring it up every day, people just stop listening. Your thoughts?
Well, certainly he's living in the past. He's not in tune with what's going on, you know, currently. He doesn't want to talk about the fact that pricing in America are up 20% since he's been in office. He wants to make everybody think that everybody's just doing well, that they've got somehow more money in their pocket. And he didn't fool anybody last night talking about the past and trying to divert from the real problems, which what he's undone at the southern border to literally have hundreds of thousands of people crossing every single month. And when the law has not changed, and President Trump, through executive action, albeit at that time, but he did fix the border, and he did solve some of our problems. Remain in Mexico alone would stop 70% of the people crossing, and Joe Biden undid that. And now we have 100,000 people a year dying from fentanyl overdoses. He needs to tell the story, the real state of the union, instead of campaign against his predecessor, which is his opponent today that's leading him in the polls. So he took advantage of the American people last night. He didn't tell them the truth of what's going on in his failed leadership.
So, Congressman, what is your goal now? We know that the RNC is a mess. We know there's new leadership there. We know that you guys are at a deficit when it comes to raising money. You do seem unified from Senator Thune to Mitch McConnell. There's very few outliers that have said they will not support President Trump. So what do you see as chairman of the Republican Study Committee as your greatest challenge?
Well, I'm a person that came into the workforce in 1985 under Ronald Reagan, and I remember vividly what he said as a very young person. He asked a question I think is salient today. He said, are you better off today than you were 4 years ago? Then it was under President Carter. Today it's going to be, you know, you're certainly better off under me if you were with President Trump. And we need to get back to the Trump policies where we had an unprecedented unemployment, real unemployment numbers that were unprecedented. Certainly more people working than ever. What we saw was a country that we were feared and revered at the same time around the world. We didn't have the issue of the unsettled places like in China and Russia and the Middle East and what's going on in South America right now with China infiltrating South America. All the chaos is going on. We did not have under President Trump, and we need to get back to that. We need to all work together in unity in the Republican Party to make sure that happens.
One thing the president did is he right now there's a big movement in the House to get rid of to get rid ByteDance, no longer owning TikTok if it's going to stay in this country. You also see ways in which you put together a bill. You believe it's the strongest anti-China measure in history. Could you explain on that?
Sure. I just came out of a group, just spent 45 minutes meeting with a bunch of folks downtown Washington, D.C., talking about this. It's a very comprehensive umbrella of all the different policies brought into one place just to demonstrate and show the invasion of China and Xi Jinping, the General Secretary of the Communist People, of what he is doing in many fronts. We mentioned fentanyl, mentioned the southern border, mentioned what he's doing in South America, South Africa, mentioned what he's also doing in funding all of the nefarious actions in Iran, buying 700,000 barrels a day of oil from Iran, which is about 91% of their production, and also in turn supplying the chips for the drones that Iran is sending to Russia. They're also funding 30%, increased their trade with Russia by 30%. Working with Russia to try to get access to their submarine force. I mean, China is the central hub of what's going on around the world. And they have an economy that's almost the size of ours. And so it's not something that we can put aside and just say, oh, this is going to go
away. Even though it's struggling.
It will not go away.
They are struggling, right?
Well, they are struggling, but do we really believe they are? We're not really sure. They're very good at not revealing the truth, and so we're always trying to figure out what it is. What we do know, and I was reported out today that this so-called Document 79, where they're trying to get rid of all American companies in China, all of our technology companies, and at the same time, we're looking at the adversarial nations like China, Iran, Russia, North Korea, and Venezuela, making sure that those countries don't have access to our data of our people and our companies. And that's really what this TikTok conversation is about. ByteDance sells down to less than 20% ownership. They can keep their equity investment. Otherwise, TikTok has to go.
Wait a second. So they can own a piece of ByteDance? ByteDance can own a piece?
Yeah. So our bill and the conversation there is that they can own a piece, but they won't. And that's why they said in their narrative that making them get rid of some of their ownership or down to that level where they're not a majority owner is basically essentially killing TikTok in America. And what we're saying and through the hearings that we've seen in Congress is that ByteDance has the ability to have the algorithms, the ability to stop doing what they're doing, yet they continue to collect data. They continue to collect data not only on individuals but also on businesses in America. And with AI, that data is very valuable.
Have other countries banned TikTok?
I don't know about other countries, but I'm sure a lot of countries will follow our lead based on what comes out of this. And we saw the vote yesterday was 50-0, and that was significant bipartisanship in this. And this is something that the former speaker worked on trying to get Pelosi to do this, and she refused to have a bipartisan China Select Committee to address these 4 years ago now. And when we got the majority back last year, put this in place, and a lot of bipartisan work coming out. And what this bill does that I introduced, it takes all the great work that's been done in Congress and highlights that and gives an umbrella for these individual bills like TikTok and others, border issues to be addressed, and shows how they all fit together.
So what you're referring to is a Wall Street Journal story that talks about deleting America. China intensifies push to delete America from its technology. And it's called Document 79. It was written in 2022. And it's a big push to make sure that they basically produce and diminish Cisco's role, Oracle's role, Microsoft, Dell, IBM, as well as Apple, and try to do what they're doing inside their country. And it's bolstering Huawei. Remember that name. So Huawei is getting stronger because China is trying to keep it nationalistic. So why don't we just help them? since big business won't make the mature decisions because all they see is profit, why don't China's saying, I'm giving you a shove. Is there anything else you could do while keeping the spirit of capitalism alive? Instead of being shoved, can we just jump?
Well, certainly we're seeing an economic war like we've never seen in our existence. You know, we separated ourselves, obviously, 247 years ago from the largest economic power in the world. And now we're seeing this the rise of China, and certainly in just the last 20 years. And what they're doing is trying to crush us economically and control us militarily. And when you couple this, and the China bill talks about this also, about the size of the Chinese military growing, be double our size as far as growth goes, doubling our size and growth over the next 10 years. And we see this, you know, the Indo-Pacific, people are very, our allies are very nervous about what's going on. If you look at the third largest economy in this, Brian, is that it's Japan, and it's at $4 trillion, and China at $16 trillion. And we're at 23. There's a huge chasm between number two and number three. Germany is very close to Japan. The real concern we should have as an American government, as an American people, is what China is trying to exact on us with trade, with finance sectors, with what's happening with the southern border, what's happening with the different continents they're on, and what they're trying to do with their Belt and Road Initiative. And again, we address all this, pull it in a comprehensive package, to show everyone that it's not just an isolated, that, mm-hmm. you know, Republicans are going after TikTok. So it's really a comprehensive look at the entire China relationship.
I'll tell you, the next president, you don't have to divide America when you're going against China. It's a unifying stand that you're making. It's something that you are not saying Republican or Democrat, saying, hey, if you're an American, read this, understand what we're doing, understand what we're up against. So this is not a divisive issue, and that's why your committee, in my view, has been so affected and respected. Congressman Kevin Hearn, thanks so much.
Thanks for having me, Brian. Have a great day.
You too. 1-866-408-7669. Ironically, on Fridays, I'm always on KRAMG, so always great to find out what everyone's thinking about in Oklahoma. Don't move.
It's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
This was his "How about them apples" speech for me. I mean, we've watched this before. I think that grabbing the room by, you know, he started with World War II and the Civil War, and rooted the threat facing our country from my predecessor in those two, you know, epic battles, and then he quoted Ronald Reagan. It was like a punch in the face to every Republican in the room.
It wasn't a punch in the face. I actually, you know, Reagan obviously would have been strong in the on Ukraine. Absolutely. So would George W. Bush and H.W. Bush. Absolutely. But what they did is, and what Reagan was brilliant at, and no one can contend this, is explaining it. So was George Bush. It was relentless. I used these examples before, is that if George Bush wanted to get funding for the Iraq war and it was going bad, you know what he would do? He wouldn't duck. He would do a sit down. Dick Cheney would be on Meet the Press. Colin Powell would be out there. Donald Rumsfeld would be talking about it. Bob Gates would be aggressively pursuing it, letting the his side and the Democrats know why it's important and where we go from here. I remember it because he was losing some veteran Republicans, but he was explaining it. And this president doesn't explain it, and that's why they're there. And if you're trying to get hurt Republicans' feeling, it's not going to happen, because most of the base does not agree with me that Ukraine should be financed. And I think we should be supporting them, not the way Biden's doing it, but I would get them the missiles they need because I think they'll win, and I think they're a country with a lot of promise, although far from perfect. But that is a little of the feedback they're getting today. Democrats seem, for the most part, pretty happy with what they heard from their president. Also, good news for President Trump, I think. And that is, you know, your opponent, they're not going to be able to pull him now. Here's Van Jones, cut 14.
Man, very proud, very proud. Look, strong at the beginning, strong on Ukraine, strong about January 6th, strong in the middle. He was willing. He put his chest out to those Republicans. He ain't scared of the Republicans. He said, hey, let's fight right now about the border. Let's fight right now about these tax cuts for gazillionaires. Strong at the end, owning his age issue. I thought that was a remarkable, fiery, powerful, vigorous guy.
I want to bring all sides. That was Van Jones' things. And it was a campaign speech. It was like something you would get at the convention. That's fine. That's not how you lead. I mean, to me, I just think you need people that got to be leaders. And I didn't see any leadership there. I saw a partisan fighting for his political survival. But right now, in terms of making his case and getting things done, it's not. No one believes he's tough on crime. No one believes he didn't set the table for this disaster and the defund the police that he never pushed back on. And no one believes he's tough at the border. So we'll see what happens from here. The people that actually are on the border know he's not tough on the border. Brian Kilmeade.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I should have said undocumented, but that's not a big thing, okay? What's the big thing about
that? I actually wasn't even going to ask about that. I was just going to ask more about the moment. But you do think that he should have said undocumented? That wasn't going to be my question.
Well, we usually say undocumented. Uh-huh. He said illegal. I don't think it's a big deal.
Okay.
I don't think it's a big deal.
But more broadly.
Because I think his focus was on the sympathy for the family.
Yeah.
It's a terrible tragedy.
It's so hysterical. Kennedy's here. You're noticing her on Fox Nation. And he's responding to the fact that Joe Biden came out and was kind of badgered into mentioning Lincoln Riley instead of Lakin Riley, who tragically was killed while jogging on the campus of the University of Georgia by an illegal immigrant that should have never been let in, deported after he committed a crime in New York, goes to Georgia to join his belligerent gangster brother, and then kills this
great...
His
brother was working illegally at the university.
He already committed, and on top of that, committed two crimes and is a member of this notorious gang in Venezuela with neck tattoos, who, by the way, one of the things they do with this notorious gang, they wear Chicago Bulls stuff. Mm. This guy in his picture, not a Bull, they don't necessarily looking for Scottie Pippen. In the picture, he's wearing a Bulls hat.
I believe that Scottie Pippen was born here.
Right, and was not in a gang.
I don't believe I've read that he's in a gang.
Right. So for Nancy, I just thought you would enjoy that because Nancy Pelosi, Dana Barrett's like, I never even asked you.
Yeah.
And what you're referring to is Joe Biden.
He's preemptively getting defensive.
Yeah. Cut five.
I'm told my predecessor called members of Congress in the Senate to demand they block the bill. He feels a political win. He viewed it as would be a political win for me and a political loser for him. It's not about him. It's not about me. I'd be a winner, not really. Lincoln Riley, an innocent young woman who was killed by an illegal.
Ugh.
That's right. But how many of thousands of people being killed by illegals?
Okay. So he has the ad-lib was horrible. He was about to go into a ditch at the speech, but then he held up the button that Republicans had with Lincoln Riley.
Yeah, Lincoln Riley is the troubled USC head football coach. As a UCLA Bruin, not a fan of his, was very curious to hear his name.
So Nancy Pelosi, because I'm not mad at him for using the word illegal. It's not a big deal. Like, really? I didn't even ask you.
Yeah, he should never ad-lib. I love that their whole new campaign strategy is let Joe be Joe. This is what happens when Joe is Joe.
Right. Would you
he
think?
He name checks a football coach instead of a young, beautiful woman who was murdered, had her skull bashed in by a Venezuelan gang member. So, obviously, the federal government not doing a great job of vetting people. And people who are displaying troubling attributes are like, yeah, come on in. I think it's great.
So what'd you think of the speech?
I thought he was definitely juiced up.
What do you mean? Red Bull?
Hard to say. Red Bull, Blood Boy, IV drip, disco dust. I don't know what it was, but it was something.
Did you make that up?
No.
Like, are there things out there called disco dust?
That's a euphemism for cocaine.
Oh.
I'm not saying the president was on cocaine.
You're
I wouldn't say
he
that.
Wasn't.
I have no idea. Right. I don't have. But I'm not privy to his.
He didn't seem like the same guy that was nodding off the day before.
Absolutely
when asked
not.
About questions.
No, they do something to him. And my whole thing is whatever that is, they need to bottle it and market it.
Right.
And allow the free market to decide if that is a viable product.
And senior homes all around the country.
They would mainline it into their clients.
Whatever they're giving them, saying they're giving them something, they can't give them all the time or else they would. So, I mean, obviously they would have given for the Robert Hur interview, which is so horrendous. They're like, he committed a crime, but he's so sympathetic and forgetful, we can't charge him. So that story is going to come up again. And when people say, I had a caller before, a brilliant caller said, okay, congratulations, Joe. You know, you're all right. You are coherent. So let's charge you. Mm-hmm. So they were wrong in the Robert Hur report, mm-hmm. but your actions were wrong also.
Yes.
So let's charge you. Can't have it both ways.
Very inconsistent energy levels. So they need to charge this president. It was a forceful, angry campaign speech. It didn't hit the emotional high notes that State of the Union speeches have in the past.
Right.
He super partisan from a guy who promised to be the uniter in chief.
That's over.
That never existed. And, you know, he's fighting for his political life, but at the points where he is slipping and he is tired and it's very obvious that the job is too much for him, that's when his wife and everyone around him, they're committing elder abuse and they should be ashamed of themselves.
So how about this? Last night, without any irony, he talks about responsible gun use. Last night, he talks about paying your fair share of taxes. Come on. We're built on the back. And last night, he also talked about the threat of China and bringing business back. Basically, can't he just talk to Hunter one-on-one at the table? All the things that Hunter screwed up, this guy brings up. Does he understand who's in his family?
Yeah, all the things his son has been federally either investigated or indicted for. Yeah. Taxes, China, guns.
And right away, by the way, CEFC, they also talk about the Belt and Road Program. CEFC was part of the Belt and Road Program, created to upend American interests in developing countries around the world. He had no problem investing in a company for China.
No, and that's China's point, is to skip the R&D part because that's very time consuming. You steal everyone else's great ideas, you know, best practices, as mm-hmm. I guess what the commies think it is, and then you catapult your country into hegemony.
So I want you to hear what Marco Rubio said about last night's speech, cut 22.
The whole thing was just bizarre. You say hyper-partisan, no doubt about it. I've never seen a State of the Union ever. I don't recall any. Maybe there's been one in the past where a sitting president mentions his predecessor or opponent and future opponent so many different times and misleads people with it. So I think the only thing he achieved tonight, there's a bunch of Democrats saying, breathing a sigh of relief that he's not Weekend at Bernie's, that he's not, that, you know, he's alive and that he was able to get through his speech and that apparently he's still able to scream.
That was Marco Rubio.
Rubio did a way better job responding to the State of the Union than when he was actually tasked with the Republican rebuttal.
Did you see
Thirsty Marco?
Right.
Yeah,
that
was great.
He made it. I know like a year later, he came on to our set. We were in Washington. And we made a joke about it. He was not ready to joke.
No, he's not a warm guy.
I do think he's warm. I get along with him.
But I've
he's
never not hugged like, him, he's, so he's I not, wouldn't. I don't know his body.
You're not
temperature.
A hugger either, though. Are you a hugger?
Sometimes depends.
Right. I don't see you as a big hugger.
Well, I'm not a germ person. I don't like germs.
Right.
And I feel like you can transmit a lot of germs with too much hugging.
But you know what the worst is? I'm not a hugger. But let's say you make the commitment to go for a hug, and you're hugging somebody that doesn't want to be hugged.
It's awful.
So I'd rather never know if I should have hugged somebody.
Yeah.
Because if you try to hug, there's only a lose situation. If they hug back, then I'm like, I should
what
have probably
if they
hugged earlier.
Too long? Yeah. It's but then it gets weird.
Right. And I don't know. Does it make you feel better?
I feel a lot better.
Right. So Katie Britt.
I watched that.
What'd you think?
Weird.
Cut 13.
And despite what he tells you, our communities are not safer. For years, the left has coddled criminals and defunded the police, all while letting repeat offenders walk free. The result is tragic, but foreseeable. From our small towns to America's most iconic city streets,
yeah, she did a good job. I mean, she delivered it fine. She wasn't nervous, but she was very deliberate. She didn't miss a word.
Her cadence was
interesting.
Very odd.
But do you see talent?
At some point, but yeah. I don't think you put someone with potential in a position to fail.
The best
ever.
I think
she has to realize a little bit more of that potential before we fall all over ourselves congratulating her.
Right. The best ever was Tim Scott. I mean, Tim Scott, basically, people said you better run for president after that.
Yeah. Remember Joe Kennedy III drooling? They tried to do a little town hall with him. And he spoke in front of people, and he had drool all over his. Oh. It is a no win situation.
We'll see. The other thing was RFK weighed in last night, and if people think that they're sleeping on him, if he goes on the Libertarian ticket, that's your ticket. That's on 50 states.
I'm not a registered Libertarian. I am a philosophical Libertarian.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not a member of the Libertarian Party.
What party will have you? None of my business.
Pants party?
The pants. Here is Robert Kennedy, COP 25.
What we once were, we can be again. How do I know that? It's because everywhere I go in this country, I see a profound determination among Americans to heal. 80% of Americans say they don't want to be forced to choose in this election between the lesser of two evils. They're tired of voting against something or someone. I see it in the crowds of mixed Republicans and Democrats and independents who attend my rallies that a growing number of Americans are rejecting divisiveness.
Right. When I'm playing a soundbite, do not play the violin. That really bothers me.
I can't help it. You know I'm a string hobbyist.
Did you see that? Isn't that weird?
It was like a
cello or a violin. It was like, hey, you know what? I don't want to tell him to stop playing, but I got to get this speech off. I got to do this tape. So could you just keep it down a little in the back?
Ed,
I mean, no one
I
ever...
appreciate your talent. Put the bow down.
Then he started playing
The Devil Went Down to Georgia.
But listen, I think if he gets 4% in all these states, I mean, this is going to change the entire race.
Well, it's interesting because there are people who think that he'll take votes away from Trump. But when you insert him into the polling, he actually does more damage to Biden.
Right. I know I saw it early on. It was early Trump. So then Trump got that poll and just eviscerated him. One thing about Trump, he was born with opposition research. So whatever you do, it's like, oh, you cross me, I got everything on you. That fifth grade girl you broke up with, still angry. And in fact, I got a quote from her. And that's why one thing I regretted when we interviewed him on Tuesday is like, do you have opposition research on a possible other opponent? If at the last minute they take out Biden, do you have Whitmer, Newsom, Pritzker? Who else would it be? I mean, these are the people that would run.
Michelle Obama.
Done.
She said no.
Yeah, she said no.
Meghan Markle really wants to do it.
What'd you say? Oh, Wes Moore, governor of Maryland.
No, absolutely not.
He's not
no
really.
Name recognition at all whatsoever would do absolutely nothing.
Too much ramp up time you need. We don't know who he is.
Yeah. Presidential contests, they start 3 years out, unfortunately.
All right. Kennedy's going to be here a little while. Where do we get your podcast, by the way?
Oh, 1 o'clock p.m. today, Kennedy Saves the World. It's your new favorite podcast. Go to foxnews.com or foxnewspodcasts.com, and you can find Kennedy Saves the World today. My happy hour, which is a quote-unquote mocktail hour, includes an in-depth and stunningly satisfying conversation with none other than Brian Kilmeade, my mentor.
I'm not your mentor. We're peers. Will you stop that? Oh, by the way, Saturday at 9, One Nation will feature Peter Attia. We are also going to have Chris Rufo on crime, Tom Cotton.
Wow.
As well as John Crist. Have you seen John Crist on stage?
Not yet.
Really funny.
Excellent.
Back in a moment.
On the road to 2024.
They call it Super Tuesday for a reason. There's never been anything so conclusive.
Trump is the presumptive nominee.
Rematch 2024 is on Trump.
Oh, it's all going to work out. We're going to come out so good. I'm more popular than I ever was.
Biden.
Well,
Democracy 24. Right here on the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
come on, we're in a house of God. First, simmer down. Thank you. I want to thank Commissioner Kavanaugh and Chief Hodgins for that recognition.
So I want to give you an idea of what's going on there, Kennedy. Letitia James went up to speak because of this promotional ceremony for FDNY. They had captains and battalion heads and family members there. And when she got up to speak, everyone booed her. And then after she said settle down, they started chanting Trump, 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 Trump. I mean, this is in New York City. And maybe the more you think about it, you think about how close Zeldin got. You see what's going on now. The civil case against E. Jean Carroll, and then you had the $450 million that he owes the government for no reason here. I mean, this keeps up. He might win New York.
He could. Absolutely.
Do you realize that?
Yeah. I mean, no, but people, like, there is such a disconnect between cops and firefighters and the pencil pushers like Letitia James and even Eric Adams, who was supposed to be, he's cop adjacent. He loves cops. Finally, we're going to have a mayor who backs cops. But if you talk to police officers in the city, they're like,
no,
he's as bad as the rest of them. He doesn't back us up.
So now you have Letitia James. Do you think on some level she's stunned? I mean, she thinks she's a hero.
Yes.
She thinks she's a hero. She's taunting Trump online, saying every week that goes by, you owe another, I don't know, $1 million. Taunting him after a decision that she sat in court.
Yeah, which just shows how political it is. And that's what she ran on. You know, this is just politics. This is not justice for her, which is dangerous. So Alvin Bragg, who's the DA here in Manhattan, I saw him next door at Del Frisco's. And I went up to him. I said, you are single-handedly destroying this city.
And he did.
Yeah. And he goes, excuse me? And I said, you are ruining this city. Ruining it. And he glared at me with daggers. And I just went, yep.
Was he eating by himself?
No, he was there with some lackeys.
Well, you're 100% right. I give you a lot of credit because he is a mess.
He is a mess.
And I think he is an embarrassment. And my hope is that guy Gascon loses the runoff in Los Angeles. The
Hate
guy
George
in San Francisco is already out. I think there's big pushback in St. Louis. My hope is that we're a self-correcting country and we're beginning to turn it around. When Hochul takes 750 National Guardsmen and put them in down the basement into the subway, she is not sincere. She has no interest in cracking down, but she understands politically she has to. She put a bunch of people, put them in camouflage, sent them down there to not profile. Kennedy, they're going through your stuff. Like they're going to go through a 19-year-old with a hoodie and a tattoo. The same way. They're going to look at you the same way. They go through everything. I think suddenly they're realizing when it comes to criminal crime and punishment, there is no political line.
Remind me to keep some baked goods in my knapsack so I can give them out to the men and women in the National Guard as a little thank you for
them.
Their service. Yes.
I mean, they must be like, what did we
do? They don't want to do this.
Right. They should be doing their normal job. This is a part-time thing for them. They want to flood a catastrophe, an attack. They're like, really? I got to go down, walk around in camouflage down below. And guess what happened at 12:40 last night, yesterday in the Bronx in the subway? A woman was attacked. A guy jumped up to help, and he gets stabbed in the hand.
God,
awful. Good Samaritan. Nobody was there.
And we'll probably get charged.
Right. Go check out Kennedy's podcast.
Kennedy Saves the World with Brian Kilmeade today.
Right. And it's probably the best episode you've ever had.
Ever.
Right.
And ever will.
Back in a moment. Brian Kilmeade.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
All right, the day after the State of the Union address and a few days after essentially the Republican Donald Trump locked up the nomination, this has been a consequential week. Putting it in perspective, bottom of the hour, Victor Davis Hanson. We're still getting not fallout, but the reaction from the President's State of the Union. He's going to be heading to Philadelphia, try to put an explanation and exclamation point on it. And he'll discuss more about what he had last night. That's usually what you do. But last night was the campaign speech, it seems. And I thoroughly agree with Speaker Johnson. He looks so uncomfortable up there because it's disappointing. you know, you thought, here's my vision, this is what I'm going to do, and you kind of wonder how hard people will clap. But for the most part, I don't think the guy clapped at all. There were no applause lines for Republicans in it. In about 20 minutes, we're going to do a simulcast on Fox News Channel. You'll get a chance to see this great studio. But right now, let's bring in Shannon Bream, fresh off America's Newsroom, but she's also got to work this weekend on Fox News Sunday. Is that correct, Shannon? And plus, we've seen you all week long with the legal cases and the election coverage.
SCOTUS is keeping us busy. And, yeah, Super Tuesday and everything else this week. I am doing my Brian Kilmeade impression today, and then I'm doing, like, 83 different jobs at Fox. I know I'm not going to get to 84, which is your standard.
Right.
But I'm going to do the best I can to get close.
Right.
Because I'm going up to do the 5 now.
Yeah, oh, you are not.
I am doing the 5.
Wait, you're in New York?
I am in D.C., but after I talk to you, I'm getting on the train, and Lord willing, I'll be up there for the 5.
Wow, that's great. So, yeah. Shannon, first off, tell me about this Bill Hemmer situation.
Oh, my gosh, he's at the North Pole. Now, Hemmer is a true, tough, journalist who's traveled the world. Dana and I have decided that is not our assignment. By the way, he said it was 18 below. Remember, Iowa, it was like 30 below. So I'm like, I don't know if I can be that impressed by this North Pole thing. But I am.
But he showed up in the Arctic today, and that was it. It was a big mystery.
He's getting in a nuclear submarine to shoot a story.
Wow, that's fantastic. Is that where we're keeping them?
What's that?
Is that where we keep them?
Well, we do. I mean, he's a valuable national treasure.
No,
so
saying, do we keep nuclear submarines up in the Arctic?
Oh. Well, I don't know if Bill just gave away national security secret, but he said that's what he's going to do today. So I assume that's where at least one of them is.
All right, Shannon. First off, let's talk about the speech last night. The President of the United States really made it a partisan speech, but people are happy. People are happy because on the left, because he showed a lot of vigor, a lot of energy, much different from what we see when he comes walking out. First off, why was he late? Was it protesters?
Yeah, I think it was. Because, D.C., they try to make a clear path for everything. When the president moves, I mean, I think that's the thing I would miss the worst about not being president afterwards is, like, Air Force One and motorcades everywhere you go. Because the traffic here is maddening, just like New York. But, yeah, they had protesters on the route. And, Dana and I talked about this morning, a little bit surprised that Secret Service didn't have them cleared before, that close to the speech. But there's a protest at all times every day in Washington, and that one just happened to be on his path here. And so we're told, that supposedly is what slowed him down.
All right. So, Shannon, here's how this speech started. Cut one.
My fellow Americans, in January 1941, Franklin Roosevelt came to this chamber to speak to the nation. And he said, I address you at a moment unprecedented in the history of the Union. Hitler was on the march. War was raging in Europe. President Roosevelt's purpose was to wake up Congress and alert the American people that this was no ordinary time. Freedom and democracy were under assault in the world. Tonight, I come to this same chamber to address the nation. Now, it's we who face an unprecedented moment in the history of the Union. And yes, my purpose tonight is to wake up the Congress and alert the American people that this is no ordinary moment either.
So obviously he's buddies with John Meacham, who always writes about FDR. And he really thinks that comparing the Japan and Germany on the march is like comparing Russia and Donald Trump supporters. This is the same moment. I'm pretty sure that's a stretch that I think he's getting away with for some reason.
Well, and I feel like obviously that's a very specific choice that they made to start the speech that way, but it felt odd.
That's crazy. Where you're starting.
Not with a line like, we all here love America and tonight we know she can do better and we can all work together, like something that gives everybody something to applaud for in the beginning. But coming out of the gate with that imagery and that level of accusation, I think it felt like an odd choice to start with that subject matter.
Okay, fine. Odd choice. That is very diplomatic of you. What about the fact that he's yelling at people to pay their taxes like corporations and rich people? Meanwhile, does he remember his son used to live with him? That guy doesn't pay taxes. Remember he's talking about guns? Do you know the problem his son's having with guns? Remember he's talking about divesting from China? Has he mentioned that to his son? Isn't that kind of odd?
I mean, those are all issues that his son is facing. I mean, there's ongoing litigation that involves those things. But you know how he feels about Hunter, that Hunter is collateral damage in the political hit job on him.
Right.
And that he's a recovering addict and his remaining son who needs to be protected at all costs and is being mischaracterized.
Even drug addicts should pay taxes. Oh, who's coming up on your show?
Well, Senator Katie Britt is going to be with us this weekend. We're going to talk with her about, the response now, how it has been received, what she is fighting for in the Senate as the youngest working mom over there, and where they go on aid packages and the border and everything else. We've also got Tim Tebow with us. He is using his celebrity for very important things, not afraid to go into some really uncomfortable topics because it means saving innocent people around the globe.
He's the best. He's almost a perfect human being.
He told me that you beat him in arm wrestling one time.
Right. We were both shirtless too, and we have video. I'm going to show that next hour.
We're going to show it this weekend.
Shannon Bream, Fox News Sunday. Thank you.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Brian Kilmeade Show. I'm going to go on with Harris Faulkner shortly on Fox News Channel. We'll get a chance to join major networks. We've got all the stations with us, Fox Nation, as well as the Fox Nation, the Fox News app, and then our family of affiliates. And then we've got the Fox News Channel, number one network in the country. So everyone's going to be watching and joining. At bottom of the hour, though, Victor Davis Hanson's going to be with us. And we're going over the State of the Union. Yesterday was a campaign speech. I actually think in the big picture, it helped unify Republicans. I mean, there was nothing there that would force a moderate to say, well, you know, Joe Biden made a good point. He was not looking for that. I actually think it hurt his quest in order to get Nikki Haley voters, because essentially he was saying, I don't really need you. And if you are somebody who is with Donald Trump or considering it, you're not on my team anyway. I mean, he actually labeled Trump supporters on par, the way I understand it, with the same threat that America was under in 1938 when the Japanese bombed Pearl Harbor, and then we subsequently declared war on Germany at the same time. That's basically what he said. And what I think is, too, he always looked at himself as a historic figure, and I think he meets with all these historians all these times, and that's why you start off in a similar time. If he wants to talk about the challenge of Russia, then you should talk about the challenge of China and how we need for America to come together because of this. And we might have different people that look at threats differently. But right now we're seeing North Korea, Iran, China, and Russia get together. I'll listen in. Here's my introduction.
Network right now because Brian Kilmeade is about to join me. And again, there were hundreds of these anti-Israel protesters trolling the president, progressives, very angry over his policies on the Israel-Hamas war. The progressive squad, far left, seen at Biden's speech last night, wearing white and black scarves, signaling their support for Palestinians. Several members declined to clap for Biden when he walked in for the speech and did not join chants of four more years. They also held up signs as Biden spoke about his message to Israel.
I've been working nonstop to establish an immediate ceasefire that would last for 6 weeks to get all the prisoners released, all the hostages released. To get the hostages home. The United States has been leading international efforts to get more humanitarian assistance to Gaza. Protecting and saving innocent lives has to be a priority. As we look to the future, the only real solution to the situation is a two-state solution over time.
All right, so protesting the president over this issue is not new. We saw it even in the primaries. Hundreds of thousands of Democrat voters chose uncommitted or no preference over Biden in recent voting contests in key battleground states like Michigan, North Carolina, Minnesota, and others. Brian Kilmeade, co-host of Fox and Friends now. Again, we are simultaneous. You're on the radio. I'm here on television. First of all, tell me about this uncommitted vote and the protest even on the floor last night with the scarves.
Couple of things. As you know, huge impact in Michigan, over 100,000, 12,000 in North Carolina. Of course, Minnesota is a wake-up call. But what you had is the squad, all the members basically holding up signs, various say, stop the bombing, call for a ceasefire. They didn't stand up, reportedly. I wasn't in the room. They sat there sullen the whole time. Now, keep in mind, what we're witnessing here is a lack of leadership. You should just ask yourself, there's sometimes in life, especially as president, especially at his advanced age, we just got to make the right decision. Even if it upsets people in your own family, your own party, you'd make the right decision. But we're witnessing now Harrison splitting the difference in a time of war in which they're paying an awful price. I'll give you another point. He was caught on camera, but by microphones, talking to Anthony Blinken, saying, tomorrow, don't tell anyone, meaning today, I'm going to have a come to Jesus meeting with Bibi.
You know what? I think we've got a little bit of that. Pause for a second. Let me just play it. President Biden, after the address, tried to, as Brian just said, secretly tell somebody about his criticism of Prime Minister of Israel, Benjamin Netanyahu. Let's watch.
I told him, Bibi, come to Jesus. Bibi, come to Jesus.
Sir, just...
Good. See, I see this a little bit differently. Somebody who's been around microphones for a long, long time, and you too. He knew he was mic'd. That's why he said good.
I think you're giving him too much credit. way too
okay.
much credit, yeah. And I think this, and if you read some of the stories today, do you know what one of the reasons that Hamas broke off talks for a ceasefire? They see a fracturing of American support for Israel. Do you know what else? They see Benny Gantz invited to the U.S. And the War Council and the cabinet. And they say, whoa, whoa, we're not giving up hostages. We're not going to back off now. We're not going to have these talks. And that's the danger of bad leadership. You try to appease the left wing, the pro-Palestinian, pro-Hamas wing of your party, instead of doing the right thing. Yeah, absolutely humanitarian should be a factor. Absolutely should make sure there's a corridor there. But they got to be unbreakable in support, because if you leave a battalion of Hamas fighters there, we're going to be right back here 18 months later with a brand new October 7th. And Israel knows that. And he knows that. So make the tough decision. And people will appreciate that. I got news for you. That if you don't like Joe Biden on Israel, you're going to really hate Donald Trump on Israel. So, Mr. President, they're not going anywhere. There's a chance they could stay home. Take that chance and do the right thing.
All right. An alarming new report from the House Judiciary Committee finds broad surveillance of Americans' financial data. The Biden administration is accused of asking banks to search for private transactions that use terms like MAGA, Biden, Kamala, Trump. Banks were also asked to flag items bought from stores, including Bass Pro Shops and Dick's Sporting Goods. And here's committee chairman Jim Jordan.
This is scary where things are headed. All this being done with no process, no warrant, no notification to the customer that the banks are actually supposed to serve. Big government's not supposed to use big tech to censor Americans, and big government shouldn't be working with big banks to target Americans for behavior that is legal and constitutional. And that's the concern.
So we first learned about this about a month and a half or so ago, Brian. What is happening now that will keep this in the headlines?
There's no proof that it's going to stop. And there's no acknowledgement that they want to go out of bounds. And we go back to after 9/11. One of the things we did is unwind Hezbollah and a lot of the Islamic extremist activities within our country by following the financial ties. Did a great job of cutting off the money supplies to ISIS as they cropped up, and Al-Qaeda and all their affiliates. A great Hamas. In that area. Now we have Hezbollah K or K Hezbollah in that area. So we find out who's financing and we follow it down and we do it. But now we never thought that the FBI, CIA would be turning it on us. And maybe ostensibly they say, well, this is what we had to do to find out who was behind January 6th. And we had to look at things like Camp Auschwitz, Antifa, Proud Boys, Capitol, death, murder. All right. And when a bank comes up to you, and the FBI comes up to the TD Bank or another bank, and they say, hey, listen, I need this for the security and sanctity of the country. You're a patriot, right? They go, yeah, and I'm sure you're going to want to help us, correct? Maybe you're going to get some scrutiny that could be the threat around the corner, stuff that's unsaid. So they give it up. And now if they don't give it up, like a lot of Silicon Valley was not giving up for the Defense Department and helping out, they're looked at as unpatriotic. But when it comes to the banks, if you're following people that are trying to take our country down, they think they're doing the right thing. They're powerless. That's why you need Congress to come in and prevent our intelligence services from cracking down on Americans using American intelligence systems especially if the CIA is getting involved looking after us, nobody can stand up to that type of scrutiny. That's a dangerous police state. At least the foundation's being laid there. That's why Jim Jordan's committee is doing such a great job.
I wish they'd watch the border that closely and people
would be great,
across
wouldn't
the border.
It?
Yeah, well, it'd be safer.
A little bit easier. Look for the
we
guy with the
We actually have real national
tattoo.
Security at the border. Yeah. Brian Kilmeade, simulcasting with you is always fantastic. Thank you. And thank your radio listeners.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Harris. We appreciate it. I'll see you on One Nation Saturday at 9. So everyone
right.
should be watching Eastern Time. Thank you, Harris Faulkner.
It.
Appreciate it. All right, 1-866-408-7669. I'll be able to take some calls. Also, Victor Davis Hanson will put yesterday's speech in perspective. I do want to play one clip for you. Yesterday, in the midst of all this news, Letitia James, one of the most horrific figures right now in politics today, she's used her attorney general spot for pure politics, going after Trump. Now she's going after the Bruce Blakeman, the Nassau County executive, for trying to keep girls' sports just for girls. And yesterday, when she spoke at a promotion ceremony for FDNY, this is how she was greeted, I believe, cut 36.
Oh, come on. We're in a house of God. First, simmer down. Thank you. I want to thank Commissioner Kavanaugh and Chief Hodgins for that recognition.
Have you ever in your life heard that in a deep blue city like New York, where the FDNY in New York City, fighting fires in New York City, saving people's lives in New York City, were so offended by what they've witnessed here in New York City, not just because she's a Democrat, and I'm sure there's a lot of Democrats there. They see, in my humble opinion, the injustice that's taking place with Donald Trump. They see he's pro-law enforcement. He's pro-firefighter. He stands for them. And in New York, they boo her. She's stunned. And they chant his name. She thinks that she's a hero by going to court with a biased judge and deciding prior to the actual hearing that President Trump is guilty, maxing out the penalty at $450 million, dancing over the fines that increased by a million which each week that go by through social media so everyone's to see, shows up in court every day and kicks her shoes off and just smirks. And she thinks that people don't care because it's New York. I get the sense that Lee Zeldin set the table. But maybe Donald Trump does have a shot here. Maybe he is going to fill up Madison Square Garden after all.
He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
As a lifelong supporter of Israel, my entire career, no one has a stronger record with Israel than I do. I challenge any of you here. I'm the only American president to visit Israel in wartime. But there is no other path that guarantees Israel's security and democracy. There is no other path that guarantees Palestinians can live in peace with peace and dignity. And there's no other path that guarantees peace between Israel and all of its neighbors, including Saudi Arabia, with whom I'm talking.
So he brought up Gaza. He brought up the two-state solution. He brought up he's setting up a corridor where we're going to have no troops on the ground. We're going to bring aid to the shore of the Gaza Strip, and we're going to bring it through a corridor so the Palestinians get it. I don't want one innocent Palestinian to die. None of you do either. But is anyone concerned that we're going to be fortifying Hamas? Do you know that Hamas did with all their money? They made this intricate tunnel system. The people never got any of that money. Do you really think the people are going to get the food they need? I don't know if you could do this half-assed. Victor Davis Hanson joins us now, a senior fellow at the Hoover Institute. So, Victor, I was surprised he started with Ukraine. And when it came to Israel, I was glad he didn't call for a ceasefire. But once again, two-state solution, and on his own, he's going to do a humanitarian corridor. Your thoughts?
Well, in general, I thought it was a very angry old man, get off my grass rant. I think it came across that way. I've never seen a more partisan State of the Union address. I don't think the American people want to start off with Ukraine. It was a necessary topic, but not the signature topic. He seemed to be accusatory as if it was a campaign speech. I've never seen a president address and get in an argument basically with people in the audience or attack Supreme Court justices in the middle of the Congress. There were a lot of firsts there. The Israel thing is very, I think, dangerous. The idea that we're going to make a port on Gaza and then we're going to bring American ships in, given what we see with food distribution and the violence it entails, we're going to get into a Kabul-like situation there. And October 7th looms. When he talks about a ceasefire, he didn't call for one, but that's just where it's leading. There was a ceasefire on October 7th. Israel did not break the ceasefire. And there would be a ceasefire now if they would just simply turn over the head of Hamas and release the hostages. There would be a ceasefire. He didn't make that point clear. So, General, it was a very angry speech. It polarized the nation. I think he succeeded in showing that he's animated, but he's only animated, Brian, when he's angry at his domestic opposition. That's the only thing that brings life into him. Otherwise, he's not angry at the Iranians. He's not so angry at the Houthis. He's not so angry at the Chinese. It's only the MAGA Republicans and Donald Trump and the people who support him that seem to bring him back to life.
Here's some of that exchange you discussed. Cut three.
In November, my team began serious negotiation with a bipartisan group of senators. The result was a bipartisan bill with the toughest set of border security reforms we've ever seen. Oh, you don't think so? Oh, you don't like that bill, huh? That conservatives got together and said it was a good bill? I'll be darned. That's amazing.
So is that what some of the exchange you thought about? And that was the Senator Langford bill, where Senator Langford worked with Murphy and Sinema to put together a bill. And by the way, after talking to Langford, well, the White House had an official in there the whole time, was hindering any type of progress. Was not very cooperative, not happy with the final product, but when he realized, but they didn't want to sign off on it in the Senate, and that's where he's jumping off. Will he be able to get traction with that?
I don't think so. I mean, Andrew Mayorkas quoted chapter and verse, bragging about each of the border items that he had, that Trump had initiated that secured the border, that he overturned. Biden, when he was a candidate, beg people to surge to the border. We have 8 to 10 million people who did so. This issue only came to his attention because it's an election year, and his polling found out that his own constituents felt that he had been lacking or wanting in this topic, and it was hurting him. So then he cooked up this bipartisan Senate bill and lured Mitch McConnell foolishly to buy into it. And what it really did was it gave the president all sorts of authorities to exempt illegal immigrants and had a threshold of 5,000 people, which before Biden would have been considered outrageous. And the worst thing about it is we don't need new legislation, Brian. We don't need new money. All we need to do is have the president restore the executive orders that Trump initiated, and there would be a secure border. Everybody knows that. So the question is, why are they doing it? And they're doing it because they feel that these are new constituents. In two cents, they'll grow government and they'll need more entitlements, and that's always a plus for the left. And then number two, under this new post-COVID change in balloting where 70% of the electorate does not show up on election day in swing states, they feel there'll be less audit and rigor, and a lot of people who should not be voting will be voting. And that's why they're doing it.
So there's two things. There's something else going on, and that is now they suddenly are on the border, they see it as a problem. And number two is San Francisco, the state of Oregon, New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, D.C., all have come out needing to range it, declaring we need to rein in crime, time to be tougher on crime. Let's try to bolster up with National Guard troops in New York City. In Oregon, the open air, whatever drug you want thing is not working out. Time to crack down. In San Francisco, it's time to crack down. What's going on here? Is there sincerity behind it, or is there a panic underneath it?
I think there's two things going on. One, it's an election year, and they see that crime, homelessness, and the general sense of blue state implosion is now a big election issue, especially to independents and swing voters, and they've lost them, at least for now. And then number two, I think the bicoastal left was willing to sign on to all of these things, feeling that their money, their zip code, their influence would exempt them from the consequences of their own politics and ideology, and it can't. They have to go downtown. They park in San Francisco. They park in a parking garage. They get their car broken into. They have to walk over people on Market Street, and they get carjacked. They go into their Walgreens, and everything's locked up. So they're now seeing, wow, I thought this wouldn't ever get to me, and now it's got to me, and they're angry about it. And so they're trying to pressure Joe Biden and the left to do something about it. And that's what's happening. Is it sincere? It's sincere in the sense that it's self-interested. But it took a long time for them. It had to get pretty bad. And I think it has to get a lot worse until they'll really do something and stop it. These are helpful measures, but they're not going to solve the problem.
Look, it's hard for me to imagine the average American voter, citizen, is actually going to think that Joe Biden wanted to do something at the border and wanted to crack down on crime. When we know he ran, got into office vilifying police officers, never until late, not going back and pushing back hard on defund the police. Cori Bush still says it every chance she can, wants to defund the police. Now we're left with hollowed out police officers, precincts all across the country, including in New York. I don't think any cop or the cop's family or any type of or legal people believe that the Democrats are going to get tougher on crime. And I don't think they could possibly run on it. I can't believe they're trying.
Well, they don't have anything else to run on. I mean, are they going to say that we lowered energy prices and we help push fossil fuels as a transition fuel? Are they going to say we restored deterrence in Afghanistan, the Chinese balloon? Middle East, Jake Sullivan said, was his quietest portfolio that he inherited. Are they going to say that? Are they going to say, wow, inflation's a little bit restrained, but, you know, 30% increase in staple foods, energy, shelter, are they going to run on that? They don't have anything else to run other than January 6th, abortion, Donald Trump, and Russia. And that's about it.
Would you?
So that speech was just the most disingenuous and partisan speech I've ever heard. And I think it's going to be it may have excited the Democrats that he finished the speech, that he was alive. But I think in the aftermath, the quips and the cuts and the video excerpts are really going to not be very well, because he just yelled the whole time. They won't find one clip where he was normal and quiet and conciliatory and statesmanlike. They didn't exist.
Eugene Carroll, by the way, you know, the president, the former president had $84 million due today in a bond. He just posted it. He got $91 million. So it's out there and he's OK. Now he's got to come up with $450 million. And what's happening in New York might be enough to close the gap on what Lee Zeldin started. As you know, he got within 5 or 6 points of becoming the next governor of New York as a Republican. But listen to how Letitia James was greeted yesterday. I want you to hear this out on the West Coast. Cut 36.
Come on, we're in a house of God. First, simmer down. Thank you. I want to thank Commissioner Kavanaugh and Chief Hodgins for that recognition.
So I don't know if you can make it out through just audio only, but they rocked him. And it was the FDNY promotion ceremony in the heart of New York City, letting Letitia James know we know exactly what you're up to. Does that matter?
I think it does. Especially the Eugene Carroll was the worst of all of them, even worse than the criminal suits, because the woman can't remember the date. Her dress, she said, that proved she was there wasn't in existence. The Law and Order episode was basically where she got her narrative. She praised Trump as her favorite TV show, The Apprentice, in 2015. She made an app about how to break up people's marriages. The whole thing was just a joke, and everybody knew it. And I guess people are starting to see now that if you are in New York and you're a conservative and you're prominent and you're in business, you're going to have to give money to Eric Adams or Letitia James or Alvin Bragg. And you better be very careful about your social life, because these people are going to go after you and there's no justice. And so it's really going to hurt New York, and it already has. But at some point, it's not just empathy for Donald Trump. It's worry that they're destroying the whole system of law and jurisprudence. And it's very funny how what they have done. They have made Donald Trump the return to normalcy candidate, the moderate. Every one of his positions is considered pretty much where Bill Clinton was, on the border, on fuel, on foreign. So he's the moderate, and Joe Biden is the radical reactionary and crazy person. And that is true of also their comportment. When Donald Trump gave a State of the Union, he may have been animated, but he didn't do what Joe Biden. Joe Biden is the angry, irrational, weird candidate. And so they have somehow, and if they keep doing it, it's going to convince independents that they want to return to normalcy. Policing, deal with the homeless, restore deterrence, make food, you know, affordable, energy affordable, stop the crime, stop the 8 million swarming into our cities, and then Donald Trump stands for that. All he has to do is just forget the tweeting and call for unity, and he will win. And Joe Biden is not the good old Joe from Scranton. He is an aberration. I don't think we've ever seen anything like that that we saw in that State of the Union.
And I'll tell you what, I don't like the cataclysmic terms. If your guy loses, the country's over. But you know, without Sinema and Manchin in the Senate, if Joe Biden finds a way to beat Donald Trump and the Senate does not go Republican, there's nothing blocking the end of the filibuster and that ridiculous, detrimental agenda. That there's a danger there.
Yeah, absolutely. They feel that America was flawed at its beginning. It got worse during its maturity, and now it's hopeless without fundamentally transforming it. And Joe Biden doesn't know any of that. He's just a veneer. He's just a construct that this hard left, Obama, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders squad, wing of the – it's not the wing, it's the Democratic Party now – are running via his veneer. And it's very dangerous. And if they get control of the Senate and the House, it's going to be nightmarish. So I agree with you. And so this is a civilizational election, Brian, that you're either for civilization as we knew it or you're not. And it's chaos versus civilization in November.
And I heard you say something last week that I really based my monologue on Saturday night. And that is, while we're all caught up in the day-to-day on this race, the comeback of Donald Trump, it's easy. The water gradually got hotter. You don't realize how hot it is. We're witnessing the greatest comeback in American political history. It's not over. He's got to finish it off. But this comeback was unthinkable in years past.
It's unthinkable. In January of 2021, he was written off as an insurrectionist. Even people in his own party said, we want DeSantis. And he persevered. He was libeled. He was indicted. Everybody each time said he'll be in jail. Da 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 da. He'll be broke. And it was almost Nietzschean. Every time they tried to destroy him, he got stronger in the polls. And then he lost weight. He looks more dynamic. He looks as young as he was when he was president. I don't know any other person who could have taken that personal invective and that damage to his family and this effort to destroy him in every dimension, and he survived. Nixon had that ability after 1962 when he lost the governorship, but he didn't experience a fraction of what they're doing. The Nixon hatred was not a fraction of what Trump has experienced.
Victor Davis Hanson, always educational, interesting to get a perspective. Thanks so much, Victor.
Thank you, Brian.
Senior fellow of the Hoover Institute, always great. Listen, we come back. We'll wrap up this hour. Don't forget, One Nation, Saturday night at 9 o'clock. I'll tell you what's going to be coming your way. You'll listen to The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's The Brian Kilmeade Show. Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Some of you might know what a big speech like I have to do is coming up to State of the Union. Any advice you have for me in my delivering my speech?
Well, sir, in my capacity as president, all I had to deal with was a meteor.
There's no crying in politics.
Well, what I hope is my politics doesn't make anybody else cry.
Don't forget to save a dance for the First Lady in the East Room.
So those are all the people that played presidents on TV, and it's even worse than it sounds when you see it, because President looks 120, All these guys, and everything just seems so scripted and stilted. I mean, you have to do it over again. If you have a director there, do it again.
But why even do it? Why are we wasting the president's time?
Oh, I don't know.
Michael Douglas and Samuel Jackson, whoever else is not Samuel Jackson, who was a Denzel. Morgan Freeman, thank you. Yeah. But like, and plus, they all look so old. I mean,
everybody.
I mean, they like Biden Michael looks Douglas, old. Michael Douglas looks wildly old. All of them. A waste of everyone's time.
Right. On the other thing, there's some really good ads that Trump people are running out. He's going to be very aggressive.
His ads are done so well.
Yeah. And they're going to be quick and they're going to be thorough. He's going to go for the knockout. You know why? He sees the finish line now. And also he sees all these court cases are coming up. But it must have been on some level, even for him, overwhelming. But now he sees exactly what has to happen. Delay, delay, delay. And if I have to go in, like with Bragg, I got to win. So come on, guys. You're getting paid a lot of money. Bragg's case is a joke. You win that, I think it'll go a long way to putting a substantial victory over Joe Biden, who probably will get a bump from his base and close the gap temporarily if Trump continues as he's doing. Listen, I'll be on with Chris Rufo, Tom Cotton, John Crist on Saturday, Peter and Tia. You're going to love it. Don't miss One Nation Saturday at 9.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.